Some folks say there ain't no bears in Arkansas. It's time for the SAFTAcast, the only podcast out there that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, and publishing. I'm your host, Scott C. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, everyone all around, to episode 70 here of the SAFTAcast, and it's, as always, a solid episode. And of course, we at the Sundress Academy for the Arts are happy to bring it to you. But before we get to the episode, speaking of the Sundress Academy for the Arts, SAFTA, and Sundress Publications, I got the news for ya, and here it's coming. Hey folks, if you've been keeping up with us on the Sundress Academy Facebook page, which you can find, by the way, if this is your first time with us, searching out Sundress Academy for the Arts on Facebook, you there can find out about two of our major events coming up in the near future. This Sunday afternoon, March 12th at 2 p.m. at Bar Marley, that's 760 Stone Street Northwest in downtown Knoxville, you can experience, once again, the Sundress Reading Series, the award-winning reading series. This comes to you monthly, and it is a... Oh, man, I cannot tell you how awesome the lineup is this month. It's a great one, folks. Three guests, Gary McDowell, Siobhan Brannigan, and Christina Seymour. That is a stellar lineup right there, my friends. So, this Sunday again, make sure if you're in the Knoxville area, check out the Sundress Reading Series on March 12th, beginning at 2 p.m. at Bar Marley, 760 Stone Street Northwest. Now, maybe you can't make it to SAFTA in Knoxville this Sunday, but next Sunday, March 19th, it's time once again for a SAFTA workshop event. And this month, it is Nothing Into Something, a workshop for scripts and slackers. That is Sunday, 319, 1 to 4 p.m. at Firefly Farms, the home of the Sundress Academy for the Arts in Knoxville, Tennessee. This program being hosted by Harrison Young, award-winning and quite successful playwright, is going to be talking all about how to break through when you're writing a script, if you're slacking and you don't have the pressure of, say, a deadline on you. But there's a little bit of a catch. This is an interesting workshop, friends. Let me explain it just to you a little bit. Get your tickets now, meaning today, ideally. And you can get those tickets by going to the Sundress Academy for the Arts website or finding the website via our Facebook page, which I just told you about. And the reason you want to get these in as soon as possible is that all the participants are going to come up with a title for a script. And then a title will be assigned to you, and you're going to have to produce a script based on that title for that person. It's an interesting workshop. For all the details on how this runs, I've only given you a bare bones description of it. Again, Sundress Academy for the Arts on Facebook. That is where you can find out everything that is going on and coming up with the Sundress Academy for the Arts, except one thing. The SAFTAcast, because we have our own webpage and everything, and, you know, I like to talk about it here on the podcast itself. Our next episode, episode 71, coming out in 2 weeks, is our annual birthday show. Oh, happy third birthday, SAFTAcast. And to celebrate, as always, we always do a special promo and a special episode. Well, our special promo drops next week, and it's going to be featuring something we have only done once before in the history of this show. That should be interesting. And just as interesting is the episode itself coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm only going to say this. Our guest is someone that has been on this show before, but it's been a while. Like, a long while. Back when this show was a shade of its current self. This'll be fun, so stay tuned for that. Coming out next week, the announcement about that. And stay tuned right now for today's episode, episode 70. Let me tell you, folks, Sarah Marcus Donnelly is on the program. You're aware of that already, I'm sure, because you've clicked on this episode and through the website or on iTunes. But let me tell you, this is an interesting and a good one, folks. Lots of things get covered in this one, from Sarah's enjoyment of backcountry and outdoors and hiking to talking about tattoos, as well as what is the best TV show about Texas football? Probably only one title can come into mind for that one, and maybe it is the best. But we also talk about things like what bores you the most in life? Just what bores you? And much, much more. That's coming at you in about 31 seconds, because as always, it's time for the theme song. ¶¶
Hi, Scott. How's it going?
Hey, it's doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Great to hear. Thanks so much for coming on the show and being a part of it.
Yeah, thanks for asking me. Is everything okay? Can you hear me? Sometimes my house is really bad.
No, I can hear you. I can hear you really well.
Okay, great. Internet's probably better than the phone at our house.
Most of the time anyway, now that's the way it seems to be with people. I don't remember, I don't know any
Definitely.
I don't know anyone who has a landline anymore.
Yeah, I don't, my parents.
I would say that, but last June my parents cut it off and were like, we'll just use a cell phone now. What's the point? Oh.
Smart of them.
But anyway, again, thank you for being on the show. I always like to start off the program with the burning question that is on everyone's mind.
I'm ready.
What activity bores you the most to do?
Oh, man. There's many, but I'd have to say right now in my life, I am so bored with grading papers. I would rather almost do anything else.
Do you have a lot to do? Is that why it's boring, or is it just tedious?
Tedious. I love my students and often have really brilliant things to say. I think maybe I'm feeling a little jaded because I work with teenagers, and as you know, they're very excited to read what their grade is, but not super excited to read through all of the laborious comments. So sometimes as I'm grading, I'm just thinking to myself, I think I'm writing this just so I can read it. So it gets a little, I don't know, depressing, I guess.
Do you work with high school students primarily?
I do. This year I'm with juniors.
Do you teach K through 12? Are you primary yet or secondary?
I teach K through 12. I've been in urban education for 4 years now. And prior to that, after my MFA and during my MFA, I adjuncted for 4 years, which was really fun, but totally unmanageable. So I switched to high school, which has been really rewarding.
Except the grading aspect.
Yeah, you know what? It's also just like before spring break, the weather's bad. It's a bad combo.
Is grading ever not boring?
I think sometimes when you do really exciting projects, it's fun. So right now we're reading Hamlet and there's a lot of acting, and grading that is fantastic. I think sitting around and reading papers that nobody wanted to write is a huge bummer.
I think back on high school. I feel bad for like my science teachers and such who tried to assign like a research paper to us.
Oh yeah. I was a nightmare in high school, so this is the not even karma happening. I deserve much trickier fate.
Do I dare ask what you mean by nightmare in high school?
I was a real gem. I was mean to my teachers. I didn't like anybody. I was really involved with myself. I was like really bratty. I was really, really bratty, and I was always in trouble, and I just wanted everyone to leave me alone. And if they didn't, then I was not super pleasant teenager. I'll say that.
Have you gone back since and tried to make peace with that era? Like talk to your teachers or talk to other students?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually went to a boarding school, and it was a character first boarding school for high schoolers who maybe needed some assistance with their character. And I still keep in touch with several of the teachers from there. And I definitely connected with a few people. And that's been really cool to kind of see that come full circle as an adult. But, there are definitely people who, endured endured myself and probably several other angry teenagers who were away from home. I think I remember one time, I don't know if it was one of the headmasters or if he was acting dean, somebody told me that I was the most manipulative student that they had ever met, which is saying a lot since this was like a character first boarding school for kids who were kind of in trouble all the time. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, me? I mean, you've seen so many students. That's really, it's really an intense honor.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't know whether to feel complimented or insulted.
I'm sure at the time I was super insulted because I took everything so personally, but As an adult, I can see why someone might have drawn that conclusion about me based on my behavior.
Do you look back a little bit now and laugh at yourself, or do you cringe at that era of your life?
Oh man, I think it's a bit of both. Look, kids, it's hard being a kid, and it is hard growing up, and I really struggled with addiction. I've been sober for a little over 15 years now, so I think, thank God, I'm able to look back and see a lot of truths that I certainly could not see at the time. So a part of me laughs at the absurdity of it all. And a part of me, you know, when I really think about some of the ways I treated the people around me, I mean, it's hard to feel good about that.
Solidarity, as a side note, 10 for me this past year.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, congrats to you as well. I can understand, though I always feel ashamed of saying, you know, anything about that I'm sober, because I feel like I don't have a rock bottom story.
Sure.
At all. It was just, I quit. And, you know, because I could sense a bad road coming and talk to.
But that is the rock bottom story. That's it. You were in enough emotional pain that you were like, this is not going to work out for me. I mean, that was your bottom. That's excellent.
Maybe then I do have a rock bottom story. I talked to somebody once who said, he looked at me, he's like, Scott, if you think you are, then you are. And it's like, oh, wow, okay. Okay. Because I always just felt embarrassed and ashamed.
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't, you know, I always tell my new people that I work with that I don't know anybody who is a normal drinker or anybody who uses drugs recreationally who's ever like, I think I'll just check out an AA meeting and see if it's for me. No one, the thought does not cross their mind. So, I mean, that's usually a sure sign that you need some other guidance, perhaps.
I think I'll give this a shot. What the heck? What have I got to lose? It's a little more serious than that. Well, yeah, solidarity then on that. It can be difficult, especially when you're a writer, to be that way. Because there's expectations of us almost.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I was concerned that I wouldn't like be able to access parts of myself, or I was like living in some delusion that I was more productive or better when I was using. But I think it just took a little bit of time to, you know, shatter that.
Time to figure out, you know, okay, I'm going to swap one addiction for another as I look at the venti coffee sitting next to me, my third of the day, you know?
Sure. Guilty of that.
Exactly. Thought about getting a tattoo of a coffee bean on me that just says, I'll break your heart.
Man, I like that. Yeah, that's another kind of addiction. I got my first tattoo, I think I was like 25 when I got it. And I had thought for so many years about it before I committed because I was so scared to have something permanently on my body. And I never thought I'd be somebody with tattoos, but I can't seem to stop.
What was that first one that you'd been thinking about for years?
Well, it is a bear on my ankle, and I ended up getting it with my best friend who got the same bear and then a little bear for one of her daughters. And I could never think of anything that I would have wanted on my body forever until I began this great obsession with bears. And I knew in my gut that I needed to have one permanently.
Obsession with bear. Is it like a realistic bear or more of like a teddy bear?
It's a real, well, I mean, it's a tattoo. It's not like an angry bear. It's more of like an outline of a bear. It's fairly realistic and it's got like some pretty colors in it, but it's definitely not a teddy bear. I would say from a distance, like, you know, it looks like one of those block grizzlies that you would see on some sort of image. I don't have like Grateful Dead bear on my ankle. Know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, you don't want the dancing Jerry bear. You know?
No, I wanted.
So that was your first one. How many do you have now?
Well, I only have four, but I don't know. I sincerely never thought I would get a tattoo, and I thought once I got one that I would feel like just so great about it, and I did. And in fact, I felt so great that I just can't stop. Now that I know that I'm cool with having things on my body permanently, like opens up this whole new world of possibilities that I'm sure
Are the other three then, are they as meaningful as the bear, or what?
Yeah, sure. So they're all, the rest of them are all words. So on my wrist, I have all my wings from the Anne Sexton poem In Celebration of My Uterus. And on my side, I have one of my wedding vows. And on my arm, I have you and me against the world in my husband's handwriting.
That's extremely sweet.
Yeah, we like that stuff. I mean, you know, some people are like, you're so cheesy. And I'm like, yes, we are.
When you say the wedding vows, is it the entire wedding vows or just like a few words of it, like a snippet?
It's a snippet from one of them. We had four vows, and this was, it says, to love you fiercely and unconditionally, which are very long words.
I was going to say, put the whole wedding vows. Did you write your own vows?
Yeah, we did. It was like a really cool experience. We were in Belize on a beach, and it was like so windy that we could barely hold the paper down. we really wanted our ceremony to be unique to us and representative of who we were. And so we wrote the entire ceremony with one of our best friends who officiated for us.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really cool.
My wife and I also, we did our own vows, and I'm happy I got to slip in the phrase unindicted co-conspirator.
Oh, I love that.
into our phraseology.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Do you have plans for future tattoos? Are you going to go back to maybe images? Are you going to keep with the words? Or
I don't know. We're really into camping and backcountry camping right now. And so we keep thinking about like mountain scenes, or I don't know. I don't know what I want. I don't want to be completely covered, but I started to realize after I got the tattoo on my side that I like to see my tattoos. So I like them to, you know, I want to admire them. And so I think my arms are probably the place to do that. So I think my next one's going to be on my forearm again.
Go full sleeve type of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure. My parents will be so pleased when they listen to this.
Yeah, go full sleeve, you know. I want a big dragon, you know.
Yeah.
Like slaughtering a village or something, you know.
Yeah, definitely something violent that I'll get to look at a lot.
Something that has a lot of character and story that you can lie about, you know.
Yeah, you know, I like when people ask about my tattoos when they see them. It's always interesting because people say something like, I hope this is okay, but can I ask you what that means? And I always think that's really interesting when somebody, you know, publicly wears something like that. I don't know, maybe I'm just nosy and I would just assume that it was cool to ask questions like that if somebody's putting all that out there.
No, I think it's the same thing. That's why I do this podcast the way I do. It's like, I want to know people's stories, you know?
Yeah.
Like I got my first tattoo last August, and it's a outdated technology. It's the insert you used to put into a 45 record to put it onto a 35, a 33 and a third. Because I grew up with a lot of vinyl albums as a kid, and I would steal my mother's albums and set me down the path to becoming a DJ. So
that's so awesome, and it's special to you, and it's something that, you know, is different, but certainly I'm sure you don't know many people with that tattoo.
No, and the artist who did it with a little bit of static in there to recreate the feel of when I was on radio, which used a lot of vinyl as well at the station I was at. So it's like, oh, the radio waves are in there too, the particles in the air. It's like, it's me. So, but you mentioned bears a moment ago, and I'm not going to talk about the writing, but I know the newest volume is called There Were Bears, and there's a bear on there. You seem to have a fixation with bears.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that bears are magical, and I don't know. I think about the ways in which bears are kind of looked down upon for either like being too wild and too aggressive, and they're one of the only land mammals in North America that like we're actually still afraid of, and you know, something that we try to wipe out because of our fear. And I just can't help but make those parallels with feeling like a woman, and that is kind of the plight of women and non-male identifying peoples right now. By right now, I mean forever, since forever.
Where did this obsession with bears begin for you?
I think it was, I don't know, sometime like before I got to grad school. And I just, I watch a lot of nature programs, like a lot of nature programs. And I also have this very sick thing where I enjoy watching shows about people getting attacked by animals, which I understand is problematic for many reasons, but I don't know if I feel like, yeah, it's like nature getting us back, or I'm not sure what's going on. But I think that I love this idea that there's like no rhyme or reason to doing something besides that's your instinct and you know, your need to do something. You know, it's not like bears are like, oh, I really like her. I don't think I'm going to eat her right now.
It's just the raw physicality and power.
Yeah, I think that. I think the fact that so many cultures have all of these beautiful myths woven around the idea of bears and their strength, and also like they basically stop their bodies from functioning for months and they give birth during that time. I mean, these animals are incredible.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, so like female grizzlies, they give birth in their dens during hibernation.
How does the cub take care of itself?
Just finds a way to nurse. I guess it just like wriggles itself over and is like, this is my food. I have no idea.
I'm fascinated. I'm going to be obsessed now for the next few days. I'm going to be looking into this.
You really should. I mean, I just, you know, also not to get too political, but all these new laws were just, I don't know if they were rescinded or passed, where now you can, the hunting laws are like super lax and people can now actually kill bears and wolves in their den sites in mass. I think that they can even use gas at this point. So that's really troublesome. And, you know, kind of a part of this new, I don't know, apocalyptic, if you will, landscape that we have entered into.
Yeah, this very frightening unknown landscape, indeed. I hadn't heard about that. I don't know. That seems like cheating in a way.
Yeah, it just seems pretty cruel and unusual. I mean, I get hunting for the sake of food, or you are a survivalist, or you're a homesteader, or you just will only eat your meat that you kill. Like, great, great work. I don't get this trophy hunting situation. I think it's just another, I don't know. I think it's a hyper-masculine, patriarchal construct that, you know, reinforces all the things that are wrong with rape culture and being aggressive and harming others and that being kind of accepted. I think this desire to take something else's life really disturbs me.
I could totally agree with that. I'm not a killer at all in any way.
Yeah.
How does the bear obsession manifest itself here? Like, do you collect bear memorabilia as well?
Yeah, my poor husband. Our home is kind of filled with random pictures and figurines, and we even have one of those like chainsaw carved wooden bear heads, kind of as if it were a trophy hanging over our mantle in the living room.
Does your husband kind of get you back in a sense of like he has his own obsession in the house that he collects?
He's a saint. He's just like a really, he's a saintly person. And I think at first he was really freaked out and was like, you've got a lot of bear and horse things. And I was like, I know. But he has just been like really kind and embraced that this is something that makes me happy. And he's kind of, you know, taken a step back and allowed me to enjoy that, and has just been at least seemingly satisfied to see that I'm enjoying that.
Maybe it makes it easy to shop for holidays and such.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know what is overboard, but I guess, like, here's the thing. I don't really care. Like, if it were up to me, I would just have bear everything. I have clothes with bears on them, and I have a blanket with bears on it. And I don't know if there is a line or if there is a too much. I say bring it on.
I'll know when it's too much. Until that time, though.
Yeah, I don't know if I will know. I think maybe that's the problem with being an alcoholic, is that I don't, like, do things, like, really balanced. I'm a lady of extremes, that's for sure.
Anyway, you also mentioned horses. Do you also have a thing for horses, like bears?
Yeah, I grew up riding horses, and we were fortunate enough when I was younger. I owned a horse, and I showed competitively for a while, and now I just kind of ride for fun. You know, I'm pretty relaxed about it, but it's something that's been a huge part of my life and that I have a deep love for, and I just feel super connected. And so while it's not, like, quite as intense of an obsession, there's a lot of horse things kind of around.
Do you get to go riding that often?
I try and go, like, once a week, but it's, first of all, it's, like, the most expensive sport ever. And besides that, you know, it's a huge time commitment, and, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to stay physically healthy enough to, like, have that energy after a full intense day at school with my 113 beautiful students. So, you know, it's always a challenge to, you know, find that time and balance to do things that are good for your soul.
But it's something that you'll never truly lose.
Yeah, I hope not. I went a couple of years without riding, and it felt like a part of me was missing.
May you always enjoy it.
Thank you.
Never lose that obsession. They're good for us. We need them in our lives.
Yeah, I think so. I think anything that helps you feel more connected is probably a positive thing.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, actually in a city called Beechwood, which is an eastern suburb. And I was here until high school when I went to boarding school in Maine.
Major shift then, kind of, sort of. I mean, you're still kind of in the north, northeast.
Yeah, I moved back to Cleveland eventually. But yeah, New England is its own beast. So it was definitely super different than being in the Midwest, and a totally different culture and different climate. So, you know, it was a huge adjustment.
Back to horses though for a second. You say you grew up in Cleveland, or at least a smaller town outside of Cleveland. How do you get into horse riding in Cleveland? I wouldn't expect the Ohio and Cleveland to be a place where you would suddenly learn to ride horses.
Yeah, actually, there's so many extremely beautiful and competitive stables in the area. Cleveland is like a hot spot for equine activity, which is really cool. There's a lot of, if you go outside of the city, I think, you know, most of Ohio is probably farmland. And so there's a lot of land to have horses here, which is nice.
Did your parents, like, get you into it? Or did you say one day, I was like, Mom, Dad, I want to ride horses?
Well, when I was really young, you know, three, we lived across the street from horses, and I was obsessed with them. And I was constantly begging my mom to go see them. I wanted to feed them. I wanted to be near them. I wanted to sit on them. And she was, like, really freaked out. And, you know, like most things, I wouldn't shut up about it. And finally, they conceded to my request. So I was five when I started riding. You know, look, I was really fortunate that I had grandparents who were able to help us financially take on that kind of sport, because that's a lot.
But hey, it's given you a lot of good stuff, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't my money, but I think it was totally worth it.
I ain't complaining.
Right.
So you go to boarding school in Maine for a couple of years, come back to Ohio. Did you just come back to Ohio to be back with the family, to kind of readjust? Or did you come back there to say, okay, the next stage is to go to college and I'm going to do it in Ohio?
I think that my parents probably, like, really wanted me to be at college in Ohio. And that was probably because I didn't give them like a lot of indicators that I was going to be a successful human in college based on my high school performance. So I remember being really angry at them and feeling like I couldn't believe that they didn't believe in me to be successful somewhere else. And, you know, looking back, I can see that they were probably like, we don't want to, you know, have to deal with the fallout of when you kind of mess up this opportunity. So I ended up at Kenyon College for a year, which is a small private school. And then I transferred to Miami of Ohio for my last 3 years. And, you know, I think it was a very conservative campus and I'm very liberal, but, you know, I found my space there and I was able to take honors courses and be grateful for all the experiences that I had there. And afterwards I moved to DC for 5-6 years.
What brought you back to Ohio? Because it's where you are now, if I'm not mistaken here.
Well, I definitely wanted to get out of here, and I never had plans to return. I thought I had escaped and really had really gotten out. But sometimes your family needs you, and my family's just going through a tough time. My grandmother and my aunt passed away within a couple of months of each other. And so I thought I'd come home and help out for a while. And in my mind, a while was like a year. I was like, I'll be home for a year. You know, I think I was 24, 25 when I moved home. And so for the first time in my life since I was 13, I moved in with my parents. So that was like certainly an adjustment. I mean, obviously they were lovely to open their home to me and they're fantastic roommates. However, after being on my own for so long, it was weird, definitely.
It might have been weird on their end, too, to be like suddenly, you know, to have their child back in the house.
I'm sure. They're so generous, though, and they, like your typical Jewish parents, they always want us around. And, you know, they're like, no, please come back, live with us. You know, I think my dad was more ready for me to get out of there than my mom, who was happy to just, you know, she likes to keep her family close. And I think, you know, my dad likes his house.
Do you have is your family pretty tight knit overall?
Yeah, we're small. So it's just my mom, my dad, and my sister and I, and we're close with some of our cousins, which is really nice. But it's, you know, it's a small group of us now after so many people passed away. And so I think it would be hard not to be close.
Now that you're back in Ohio and such a, you're living on your own, set up your adult life, so to speak, because what is adulthood, really? Do you still keep in regular contact with the family and everything? Or do you live nearby them or like they're across town or anything like that?
Yeah, my husband and I are about 20 minutes away, which was a conscious choice. We definitely want to be close to them. And we try to see them like once a week. So we're Jewish and we try to celebrate Shabbat together every Friday night. And so that's something that we enjoy doing. It's just, it's a time to just focus on whoever's there in front of you. My husband and I have been technology, well, not technology free. We've been digital free, meaning that we turn off our phones and we don't do any work from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. And that's been going on for a while. And that has just been a huge lifesaver.
I can only imagine. I had Jewish roommates years ago before like internet 3.0, like beginnings of rumblings of internet. So it wasn't that big of a deal. I can only imagine what it must be now with all the tech gadgets we have.
It is. I think that we, you know, look, we definitely watch Netflix. So we try to have an iPad that doesn't have any ability to contact anyone on it. So that if we want to, you know, watch a movie or, you know, binge watch your favorite show or whatever it is that we're doing, look up a recipe, we have access to doing that. You know, I'm certainly not super religious. I think it is a beautiful way to honor tradition. And I also think it's a beautiful way to honor our mental health.
Maybe we should make that like more of a thing then for people is like one day a week, kind of deplug.
Yeah. I mean, at first people were really mad at me about it and they were like super annoyed, but you know, now as people are getting used to it. So sometimes my mom will just stop over on Saturday and I'll be like, oh, hey, mom. And she's like, well, I couldn't call and tell you I was coming, so here I am. So, you know, you have to be really flexible. You just have to be down for whatever happens, which means that I'm super in the moment, and whoever is physically with me at the time is my priority, and the people who get my full undivided attention. And what a precious, beautiful gift in a time where we have so many distractions.
Mental note, that is something I might try now, is like, okay, I'm going to limit myself.
Yeah, it's also led to other, I think, healthy habits. Like, I used to have my phone be my alarm clock. And so I would leave my night reading terrible news stories on Facebook, and I would start my morning reading terrible news stories on Facebook. And that was not really working for me. So I keep my phone completely across the room, and I have an actual alarm clock. And we have a rule that we don't have our phones in our bed, which is really lovely.
My wife and I did a similar thing for a while. We have no television in the bedroom, and that's a rule. Phones are okay because we have our obsessions. But one thing I did to keep my sanity over the last few months is the moment I go into the bedroom, I do not check social media anymore. You'll just get angry. So don't read Facebook. Go to bed.
Yeah, I mean, also, I just think that there's something to be said for our ability to be mindful. And I don't think I'm able to be mindful and present and enjoying this moment with, you know, my partner, or even just me and my higher power, or me and myself, if I'm, you know, scrolling up and down on my phone like a zombie.
Good point. Maybe that's what people need to do then, is we need to find limits and such. We're getting out of hand.
It was really hard at first. You know, I had this extreme fear of missing out. I don't know what I was going to miss out on, somebody's baby post or something that I couldn't see 2 days later. Especially as a writer too, you know, I have all this anxiety about, I don't know about you, but promoting myself is the worst thing in all of ever. And so whenever I don't do it enough, and so then I'm like, well, am I missing an opportunity to post something important, or am I not reaching out to people? So I just, you know, it's, or I look and I see my friends and they seem to be superhuman. I'm like, how are you writing and publishing all of the things? Where are your minutes? And, you know, so it causes this panic of, you know, can I take this time away? But I think if I have any shot at all at, you know, sustaining my life, that I must.
Where do you find the time to write a book?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, though, you know, my friends who do that, I know who they are and what their life is like, and they really do bust their butts. You know, I don't have friends who are lazy and just luck happened to them. You know, my friends who are successful have really just given it their all. And that is something to be so proud of. And also something that I'm just super proud of them for. I just, you know, it's hard not to reflect on yourself when you see all the beautiful things that other people are doing. And you're like, what am I doing with my life?
Damn it. You know, how did you come up with something so beautiful? Suck by comparison.
Yeah. Instead of just, again, it's all about mindfulness. Instead of being like, that's not my business, right? It's just staying in the moment and appreciating it for what it is versus making it about me. You know, I think also as an alcoholic, I'm so selfish. Myself is my first thought for sure. Like, how does this relate to me versus what can I give to the world? You know, I'm like, what can I get out of this situation? And that's a mindset that I battle and struggle with on a daily basis. I heard this really beautiful saying many years ago, and I remind myself of it every single morning. I try to do a morning meditation, and somebody said to me, there are two types of business in this world. There's your business and there's none of your business. And 99% of what happens in your day is not your business. Your only business is your behavior, which really simplified everything for me.
Wow. That's something for me to try and learn myself.
Wow. It's so beautiful because when something's going on with somebody, or, you know, someone's trying to pull you into something, I get to just pause and say, is this my business? No, it's not. Like, I don't have to give this any space. I just have to act well. Like, what a relief.
That is so much healthier than my attitude of nothing really matters. This is all pointless anyway.
Yeah, it's a different take for sure.
I blame growing up upstate New York and I have a deep-seated fatalism about everything. Well, none of this matters, so what's the point? But that's a much more healthy attitude of, yeah, it's not my business to deal with that, so let it go.
It saved me from a lot of pain, that's for sure.
I will work. Okay, well, I learned much on this podcast. I must learn now how to do this. On to the great outdoors and not my business, where things are disconnected and everything. You mentioned earlier that you and your husband got into backpacking and backcountry camping recently. Was this just something spur of the moment one day? I was like, hey, let's go to a park. Or was it something that you had thought out for a little bit? Like, should we try camping? You know, what gear is out there?
Yeah. So I, because I was a naughty child, I was sent on a wilderness rehabilitation program, which basically, if people don't know what that is, I don't really know how to describe it to you other than it's like, I don't know. I think there was like a TV show about it once where you can have your children escorted into the wilderness to learn how to survive. So we had like one set of clothes and a knife and a rock, and they were like, go make a fire and, you know, don't die for 21 days. So that was kind of my baptism by fire into the wilderness. And I was really young when I did that. I was 13. And then throughout my high school career, the truth is I misbehaved and got sent on these trips, but they called them leadership trips so that they were less depressing to us. And so I got a lot of opportunities for leadership in the wilderness, in Eustis, Maine. And I really fell in love with that type of freedom and that type of simplicity. And I really tried to carry that over into my adult life. And I was so excited when I met my husband, who didn't have a lot of experience with things like that, but wanted to. So that was really exciting for us to explore together.
It was a kind of like relearning camping all over again with being with someone who didn't have that experience, and kind of like, I get to teach and learn all this again.
Our first time camping, I think that we were like sizing each other up for our wilderness skills. And I think it became apparent that we both had a lot to learn when we like couldn't keep this fire going to save our lives. And we had this backcountry trip planned for Glacier National Park and just a few short months after that. And we were like, whoa, we need to get ourselves together so that this isn't something that happens when we're out there.
Have you done numerous excursions since?
Well, we hike a lot, and we like to take weekend trips where we camp. But the only backcountry camping trip that we had was Glacier. And then coming up in April, we're going to do a week backpacking through the Smoky Mountains, which we're excited about.
Do you have a goal one day? Like, you know, one day we will do the, you know, we will hit all state parks in this region or the country.
I mean, we would love to see all of the national parks. I think that's super ambitious. But yeah, I think our goal is just to spend as much time as we possibly can, you know, out in the wilderness together doing, you know, things that we love. Although, I'll tell you what, when it's like 40 degrees and raining and you have like 7 more miles to hike up a mountain, it's easy to look at each other and be like, why do we like this? We chose to be here. We could be on a beach right now, but this was what we thought was fun. So that's cool.
It builds character.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Do you have advice for someone who doesn't do this or who may be interested in it? Maybe hearing this podcast is like, wow, you know, that sounds like something cool. What advice could you give someone who would be a noob at all this?
I would just say, you know, get out there and hike and make sure you are physically prepared and that you have the proper gear. I can't tell you how many people we saw out on the trail with inappropriate clothing or supplies, and I was, you know, a little afraid for them. Like anything, I think you just start small, and you never want to put yourself in a dangerous position. I have an autoimmune disease, and so sometimes it going on these trips it's always like a gamble. And so my husband and I always have a plan A, B, and C, depending upon how I'm physically feeling. So sites that we could possibly reach, or a backup plan if I can't. And so I suggest that for anyone, you know, who's planning to start off doing something like this.
Start small. Know what you're getting into and have fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, always safety first. It would be terrible to get yourself into a bad situation. You know, I love those survival shows. They're so great, but I don't want to be on the survival show. So, I mean, we definitely go out there and just our goal is to unwind and, you know, just reconnect and feel connected to this like gorgeous world that I feel like we barely get to see because we're so caught up in doing stuff.
And more of that, limit the technology and go out to the world and see what's there.
Yeah. If you go somewhere that you like literally do not have cell phone reception, that's always easier to put your phone away.
Indeed. You know, it sounds lovely. Maybe if I ever move back up north, it's hard to go outbacking in Florida where it's really just the weather too hot.
You guys have the Everglades.
It's true. Have the Everglades.
Yeah, I went hiking in one of the Everglade parks and you could hear the baby gators calling to their mom. And on each side of the trail, there was like really thick brush. And I was just so nervous the entire time because you know that the alligators are there and that they could just come out anytime they want. And I was like, this is really intense.
I've never faced down a bear, but I have faced down alligators. And that's a humbling experience to stare down an alligator.
But
you look at it and this thing has a look at you of like, I've been here for millennia, unchanged.
Right.
I've got you, human. Like, oh, yeah, well, I'm out. I ain't gonna mess with you. So let's take a moment, though, real quick here. I'm curious because I gotta know. You mentioned, you know, okay, limiting the technology on the Sabbath and during Shabbos, but you do use Netflix a little bit here and there. What are you currently binging on Netflix? Is there anything like recently that you're just like, oh, that's it, we're on?
I mean, we've binge-watched an embarrassing amount of shows. The moment I found out that my husband hadn't seen Friday Night Lights, that was like a mandatory, you know, month of our lives, where I rewatched Friday Night Lights, which I think is completely brilliant. I thought the writing was beautiful. I don't like anything about Texas or football, for that matter. But when I watched that show, I was like, oh, I could totally do this. I could live in Texas and, you know, pretend to like football a little bit. That would be fine. That's how like appealing they made that show look to me. So, yeah, I like the Peaky Blinders and we've been watching Shameless recently. We liked the OA. I mean, we could go through shows like nobody's business.
Are there any on the horizon of Netflix or Amazon originals that you're really looking forward to?
Oh, man. I mean, we were like really into the OA and there was a show, what was it called? Sense8, I think. It was like super strange, but like just incredibly done. Always well choreographed and just kind of the storyline seemed seamless. And yeah, we're excited for that to come back.
I've heard great things about that. I've not yet seen it. And Friday Night Lights has been in my queue for years. I've just never sat down with it.
You have to. You have to get through the first episode. Look, it's when my friends told me to watch it, I laughed in their faces. And I said, you know, screw that. Football and Texas and no thank you. It's gorgeous. It's really well done.
I've heard that it is, and I just have not found the space to carve out for it.
Sure, who has that time?
I mean, I'd love to say it's like, but I've got so many series right now. I guess I have never seen Deadwood. There, I'm opening it up. And I'm like 3 seasons behind on Star Wars Rebels, and as a Star Wars fan, I feel ashamed. But, you know.
Speaking of Deadwood, I mean, we were just in love with Westworld, too.
I did get to see that at Christmas. I binged it just before break, and I have mixed feelings on it. But I think overall it's great, and I'm looking forward.
Yeah, I think the feminist narratives are really interesting and pushing television boundaries in a way that I think few other shows have delved into.
I agree. I was stunned at how women were portrayed in there, an agency, and what it was. I thought it was one of the smartest sci-fi shows I've seen in a while.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It like just reminds me of Buffy. I'm really obsessed with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, who isn't, first of all? But I recently like rewatched all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I was nostalgic and, you know, kind of longing for that feminist hero in today's landscape. And I'm not sure that we have an equivalent now.
I don't know if we do, but we will always have Buffy, that's for sure.
We'll always have Buffy.
That should be a shirt right there. We'll always have Buffy, you know? So, yeah. The only people who don't like that show are people who've never watched it. It is up there in terms of my favorite series. It's a beautiful show, but I'm looking at our time here, and like the clock has just like flown by on us.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've only now just begun to scratch the surface of talking about it. Because now we're in the TV land, and we could be there probably for a while. But before we let you go, before we sign off on all this, you know, There Were Bears just came out. That's available through Sundress. But this isn't your first book out there.
Yeah, this is my second full length. I also have 2 chapbooks. This book is really special to me. I felt like this book was like a long time coming, and a lot of these poems have formed during my MFA time, which was really special to me. And I don't know, I think that these poems represent all of the best parts of like what I love about writing and storytelling and poetry, really.
Bears, of course, from the title alone, prominent feature of the book. We'll let our listeners realize what's going on in there in due course. Of course, also, you're writing out there not only just poetry, but your essays, of course, in many places.
Yeah, that's been, that was kind of happened organically, and I'm really glad that some of them have been, you know, getting some attention, which is lovely. And I think that that's probably the direction I'm heading in next, is writing more nonfiction, which is exciting and also terrifying.
You mentioned you're kind of working on that now and seeing the direction maybe heading that way. Do you have anything coming down the pike right now, or is it all really, the focus is really right now on the book?
You know, the focus is on the book, and everything I'm writing right now is just kind of, you know, drafting for, you know, sometime perhaps some sort of future memoir in the distant future. Yeah, right now I'm just kind of you know, relaxing and enjoying the fact that Sundress put out this really beautiful book, and I'm in love with the cover art, which one of my best friends, Gwen Homer, did. The bear on the front is beautiful, and it was delightful working with Sundress, and my editor, Sarah Henning, was amazing, and everyone there is just so lovely. It was great to be at AWP with them, and yeah, I feel really grateful.
We are grateful here on this program for the chance to talk with you and chat with you. Before we let you go, Sarah, where can the folks find you online? They want to check out some of your work, get to know you a little bit beyond the podcast.
Yeah, my website is sarahannmarcus.com, and it's Sarah with an H and Anne without an E, because you're parents. But yeah, my work is all on there, and you know, look me up online. I'm fairly accessible, I think.
You're on the Facebook, and are you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. Although I'm going to be honest, I like barely know how to use cool technology like that. So your best bet is Facebook or my website.
Well, we will definitely I hope our listeners do check you out there, because it's truly a delight to talk to you. You are truly an awesome person to chat with.
Thanks so much, Scott. It's been really great being on here.
It's been really great having you, and do not be a stranger. If you ever want to come back, just shoot us a message. We will be happy to have you on and talk more Buffy. I've probably got a load of questions in my mind right now, like, you know, who's your favorite character and where do you fall on the Riley issue?
Oh my gosh. There is definitely a Buffy conversation in our future.
Well, do not be a stranger. If you ever feel like coming back, we have an open invite for you, Sarah. Until then, though, you know, enjoy your weekend here coming up, and we'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Thanks so much, Scott. Okay, bye-bye.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.